over the days of practice. Mindfulness begins to gain some momentum. There's more continuity of awareness. And because we're exploring being aware from a particular perspective of curiosity, interest to learn about our minds and what shapes more ease, happiness, peace, and what shapes stress, struggle. As there is more momentum, the wisdom becomes stronger. That learning itself, it's not just the mindfulness that the awareness that gains momentum, it's the wisdom that gains momentum too. More wisdom available to learn and see, and wisdom gets even stronger. The understanding of what leads to suffering. When wisdom sees that so clearly, wisdom begins to let it go. When wisdom sees wholesome qualities, there's a kind of a appreciation of those, and there's more of those that become available. And as wisdom gets stronger also, it can feel, it does feel it, it's the experience is that we don't have to work so hard to be mindful. It's more natural. Sayadaw's phrase around this is that we don't have to make so much personal effort anymore. Wisdom starts doing the work. So he sometimes says, when it feels like practice is effortless, it's not that there's not the energy and the effort being happening in our experience. It's just that we're not doing it. Wisdom is doing it. Wisdom makes the effort. So it feels effortless. As there's more momentum of awareness and wisdom, the interest of wisdom. May attune to some different flavors of experience, more about the general nature of experience rather than specific details of a particular sensation or sound or emotion. One of those natures, one of the aspects of nature that wisdom gets interested in is the conditioned nature of experience. All of our experience is conditioned, arising in this moment based on many conditions from the past, and also based on how we are in this moment, how we relate to what's here in this moment. All of these things shape what is happening in this moment and what will unfold in the next moment. It's always happening. And as the mindfulness and wisdom gain momentum, wisdom sometimes orients to being curious about this conditioned nature. And in particular, the conditioned and conditioning nature of our mind and body processes. How experience in the body, sight, sound, touch, smell, taste, conditions experience to arise in the mind. A sound, the physical contact of the sound waves on the eardrum, conditions in the mind, a response of recognition. Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? What is the sound? A perception of the sound. Responses to the sound, liking it or not liking it, thinking about it, having ideas about it. On the very basic, simple mental activity of knowing that a sound has happened. That's a simple kind of conditioning, the contact of a sense door. Ooh, there's a host of things that arise in the mind. These are separate processes. This can be recognized. It's useful to recognize it. Wisdom is interested in recognizing it because there's another process that often happens in the middle of all of this, that there's an attribution of me to this whole thing. And and a sense of needing things for that sense of self to be a certain way. Feeling like this sense of self should be experiencing some things, some sense contacts, and not others. And so, as wisdom starts to see this process, sound contacting the ear, a sound being known, felt, recognized, and the host of ideas, thoughts, and a sense of self coming with that. Wisdom begins to really recognize it's not a self doing any of this. It is just conditions lawfully unfolding. The seeing of that with the seeing of that, wisdom understands holding on to something, wanting things to be other, wanting what is already here to be other, is suffering, is stress, is not necessary. So, wisdom orients to this curiosity about conditionality. And then within our own minds, there are processes of conditionality the arising of mind states. This first kind of conditionality I talked about is kind of the physical process of this organism knowing the sense world, sight, contact with the eye, perception, recognition, all of that is one kind of conditionality. The conditionality of our psychophysical organism. Another kind of conditionality is the conditionality of how our mind states affect us. When a thought arises in the mind, when an emotion arises in the mind, it in turn ripples back and affects our bodies, affects what we feel, what we perceive, what we think about. And so this is another thing that wisdom gets interested in. How do our emotions, moods, thoughts, what the Buddha called mental formations, How does that affect us? How does it condition us? We can think of this as exploring the conditioning nature of our emotions, our attitudes, our beliefs, our views. What is the nature of aversion, for instance? How does it affect the body and mind? How does it orient us? Sayadaw's way of languaging this is to say that all of these activities in our mind, all of these emotions, moods, thoughts, ideas, beliefs, they have jobs to do. And so he asks us to get curious about what's the job description of these states of mind. What's the nature of aversion? What's the job description of aversion? In my own exploration of this, in my experience, my sense of the main job description of aversion is to separate the mind from what it doesn't like. Whether that's a separation of a withdrawal or a separation of annihilation, of destroy. The function of aversion seems to be to separate. And it believes that separation will bring happiness. It seems to also, the job description of aversion, it also seems to orient attention to looking for things to separate from. And so, in this arising of this experience of aversion, it shapes all of our experience through this job, this way it engages in its job. It tends to shape the body, the feelings of the body, to have tension, tightness, contraction, a feeling of barriers or blocking. It often shapes the feeling, experience to be unpleasant. The perception or recognition of things, depending on the flavor of aversion, might be things being threatening or things being terrifying or things being unpleasant. Things being what we don't like. It tends to orient the mind to have more of this kind of mind state, more aversion. And orients the mind, in effect, to look for things to be averse to. Societal just points out this is just aversion doing its job. We don't have to hate it. That's just more aversion sneaking in. But wisdom, seeing aversion, understands this is how it affects the body. This is how it affects the mind. This is dukkha. And wisdom begins to release this job, this quality. So wisdom can be curious about what is the nature of what's happening in our minds? What's the nature, what's the job description of our attitudes and our emotions, our moods? Equally interested in the reactive emotions as in the beautiful ones. What's the job description of love? What's the job description of patience, of curiosity? Wisdom itself has a job. I express it as the job of wisdom is to understand dukkha, understand how suffering happens, understand how suffering ends. And it knows how to release dukkha. This reflection is offered again in the spirit of what can be seen as mindfulness as it becomes more interested, more continuous. Trying to see conditionality will probably get in the way of the wisdom being able to see it. So just relax. You don't have to think about these words. Keeping the practice itself simple. Are you aware? And at this point, perhaps that's all the work. Just recognizing awareness and noticing what awareness and wisdom notice. And having the discernment to recognize when a little more personal effort is supportive, when some orientation towards consciously bringing in wisdom reflections is supportive, and when it's useful to consciously let go, turn away from what is most obvious. because that's what will support mindfulness. Maybe you're already aware, already knowing what is happening. Just receiving with curiosity. And letting the learning happen. the human system, our organism, seems to want to move in the direction of balance, of ease. That seems to be a natural kind of wisdom of our human system. And yet the way our minds work, the way our minds are engaged in the process of living, the way decisions come into be in terms of what we get to put into our bodies, to through all of our senses, the processes of mind, the habitual processes of mind that have been, we can perhaps, you know, say have been shaped by years of evolution, are often connected to greed and aversion. Thinking that, and there is a happiness that comes from getting what we want, right? I mean, we get something that we want, there is a little bit of, a little bit of coming into balance for a few moments. Get rid of something we don't want. Oh, I can relax for a little while. So there is that hit of well-being, a flavor of well-being, a flavor of happiness. When greed gets what it wants, when aversion gets rid of what it doesn't want. And so those patterns tend to reinforce because we get that little hit of well-being. And yet the very experience of the greed or the aversion, as you well know, is inherently not well-being. And so what the greed, the belief in greed is, okay, this experience, and we don't often actually see this, this is not a conscious thing, but the belief in greed is, I'm willing to put up with this unpleasantness of greed in order to at some point in the future get something so that I can have some ease. And seeing this with mindfulness as we actually start to witness what's going on here, we feel the suffering of these reactive patterns. We feel the suffering of the greed. We feel the suffering of the aversion. And we also can see, one of the things we can see in terms of the wisdom, seeing the conditioned unfolding, is that in the getting something that we want, there is the happiness of the having. And there's also a kind of happiness, and I would propose this is the bigger part of the happiness. There's a happiness that comes because when we get what we want, the wanting goes away for a little while. And that is such a relief when the wanting goes away. But the only way wanting knows to have wanting go away is to get what it wants. Wanting does not understand that wanting can go away without getting what it wants, that it's just an impermanent phenomenon that can vanish because it can't sustain itself unless we're kind of churning at it. And so the system wants to move in the direction of well-being, and these habits of greed and aversion are just so fundamentally confused, thinking that getting something will make me happy. And the only way that wanting knows how to work is, oh, I got something, I feel good now. Okay, phew, that feels good. And then that ease, that well-being, doesn't last very long. And what is the mind? The mind basically thinks, okay, well, the last time I felt good was when I got what I wanted. So what do I want to want? Or what do I want to get rid of? That was the way my mind worked. Walk into the room, what do I need to get rid of so that I can be okay? So the mind fundamentally wants to move in the direction of well-being, and what awareness and wisdom do is help the mind to understand and point the way to a more reliable kind of well-being that comes not from the having, but from the letting go, the not needing to have. There's a different kind of happiness when the mind just isn't needing to pick something up, isn't needing to push something away. But this is not an obvious thing. The Buddha, in his understanding of the what he understood, and that when he became awakened, he is said to have reflected, wow, this is really subtle. This is hard to see. And my understanding of what he's pointing to is the kind of the that the craving itself, which thinks it's giving us the happiness, that the craving itself is the thing in the way of the happiness. And that the mind, through the seeing, can release that craving, and a different kind of well-being happens. And when the wisdom, the system, tastes that well-being, the system goes, oh yeah, that direction. That's a direction to head. Letting go of craving, letting go of greed, aversion, understanding how the delusion works, that leads to a deeper kind of well-being, a deeper kind of balance. So this is all conditioned. This is the practice itself unfolds based on conditions. The witnessing of how greed works, aversion works, the mind, the wisdom seeing that suffering, the system wanting to orient towards not suffering, and wisdom finding a way to release that. All of this, the practice itself unfolds very naturally out of conditions and the seeing of what's going on in our minds naturally moves us, the wisdom naturally moves us towards more release from greed, aversion, and delusion.